This is Guest Interview, and I'm Barbara DeLand. Dr. Sean McGraw, philosophy professor at Memorial University, St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada, is convening the Future of Nature, a transdisciplinary event to be held on the west coast of Newfoundland, September the 10th through the 13th, 2015.
Thanks, Barbara.
It's nice good to have you here. First of all, what do you mean by a transdisciplinary event? What disciplines will be included?
Transdisciplinary means that there are no disciplines excluded, because nobody's speaking out of their discipline. So I would distinguish it from interdisciplinary, which is the more familiar phrase. Everybody knows what interdisciplinary means. What does transdisciplinary mean? Well, interdisciplinary is actually the sharing of disciplines. So when an interdisciplinary meeting happens between, let's say, a natural scientist and a philosopher, then the natural scientist participates in philosophy, does some philosophical talk, and the philosopher presumably tries his hand at natural scientific methods. Transdisciplinary means that nobody speaks out of any discipline. We all speak above our discipline, which means we need to speak to a theme that transcends disciplines.
Speaking as people,
exactly. And for this reason, transdisciplinary excludes no one, it excludes no discipline, but it also includes the whole public. So we need to have a good topic in order for the discussion to really have any kind of value. And, of course, what could be more important than the future of nature?
Yes, I want to talk about that. But before we go on to that, who will be involved when we're talking about the people that you say are going to be in sharing this event? Who are the kinds of people who will be there?
Right. In order to answer the question, before I mention a few names...
you don't have to mention names.
No.
Are they going to be students? Are they going to be professionals? Are they going to be people from industry, from the arts? That's what I mean.
The broader idea is to bring the academic community together with the broader community, but not in such a way as to teach them and preach to them. So this is not simply a conference.
It's not an academic exercise.
No, there'll be a great deal of academic work happening there, but the academic work is meant to be seamlessly interwoven with more deliberative forms of dialogue that include, fishermen, young people, whoever just happens to be there on the street. So we're going to be bringing in, internationally renowned ecologists from all over the world, philosophers, as well as our own. Our own community of academics. Memorial University has quite a number of really accomplished people working in environmental fields, and we could actually do the whole thing on our own. But we want to bring the international people there as well in order to bring the kind of profile to the event that is necessary. Now, the point of bringing all this international and academic attention to the west coast of Newfoundland is to free up a space for local expression. So we want to make sure that the whole community is there, and everybody who wants to be there and everybody who thinks they should be there is in fact there and has a voice at the table. So it makes for quite a planning problem, a logistical problem. It's very easy to plan an academic conference. You go from nine to file of papers, but that's not what we're going to do.
Can the public come? Is it free and open to the public?
It is open to the public, yes.
Okay. And tell us now what you mean by the future of nature. Five words.
Sure. The concept of the Anthropocene is now becoming more commonplace.
The concept of the
Anthropocene. But maybe some of your listeners don't know what this concept means. It's a disputed term. I think in the next year it will be decided whether it's in fact a scientific term. What the term means is it indicates that we're in a new era of the Earth, a new geological epoch, which means that the Holocene, the period marked by a stable climate in which human beings developed civilization through agricultural achievements and so on is over, and we're in a new era where actually human population has so increased as and human activity has so increased and so saturated the system that we're actually changing the geological structure of the planet. We're changing the climate. The Anthropocene then is a term that basically indicates the era of climate change, I suppose, broadly speaking. But it also indicates mass extinction of species and technology as well, where technological advances reached to the point that, human societies are not just, they're not just one species on the planet, but it is this species that will decide the future of the planet. That's the era of the Anthropocene. The human beings are no, you can no longer distinguish human and natural history, some people put it this way, because now natural history is determined by human history. And in the Anthropocene, the question arises, what we mean by nature. Nature as a kind of scenic backdrop to human activity does no longer seems to be an accurate term. Of course, there's the disappearance of wilderness. It simply isn't there anymore. But there's also the advances in technology, which makes it very ambiguous to speak of nature in the older sense. You know, when we can actually alter the structure of organisms, when we could perhaps, when we're on the verge of perhaps creating life in a laboratory, when we can genetically design our food and perhaps genetically design ourselves, the term nature becomes a much more ambiguous one. Some environmentalists and ecologists with quite a high profile are saying we should actually drop the term. That ecology really needs to let go of the term nature. It's a romantic fantasy, a leftover from the 19th century.
And substitute what?
Well, precisely. This is the problem. So I'm not one of these death of nature philosophers. I think, in fact, that it's a bit presumptuous for, you know, a French theoretician to say, well, we'll no longer use the word nature. Well, meanwhile, the rest of the world speaks of nature, and it's meaningful to them. I think nature has emerged for us as no longer a scientific term, but as what it always was, a symbol, or what the philosopher Peirce would call a vague term. And vagueness is not always a bad thing. It's a symbol because it's invested with significance for us. So when we say nature, I'm worried about nature, we think of things like fresh water and clean air, and abundant
greenery.
I think that our concern for these kinds of things in the era of the Anthropocene, if we are in that era, is a real concern. And this term then has a vital significance still. But we have to rethink now what it means.
Are you interchanging the word Anthropocene and climate change?
I think Anthropocene is perhaps a little broader than climate change, because climate change is only one of many problems we're facing right now.
So that we have a clear understanding what you mean when you use that word. In this event, is the reason you're holding it on the west coast of Newfoundland, Canada, because that area is still somewhat what many of us like to call natural. In fact, Newfoundland in general, the island of Newfoundland, seems to be less disturbed in many ways than other parts of Canada. Is that one of the reasons you're holding it there on the west coast of Newfoundland?
Yes, certainly. The intervention, is what we call it, is designed to target a ecologically sensitive place. Now, a place can be ecologically sensitive for a variety of reasons. It could be because it's about to face massive development and transformation, which I think is true of the island of Newfoundland. And we're not just talking about the natural development, but also the demise of rural communities, the development of resources, of course, oil and so on. It could be also, a place could be ecologically sensitive for a different reason. It might be ecologically sensitive because it's been destroyed already, you know. I think of places in Southeast Asia they're also ecologically sensitive. So we're not romantics. We're not going there simply because we want to enthuse and romanticize Newfoundland. We want to go there because at this point in Newfoundland's history, this is a discussion really worth having. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly a discussion that's worth having With the local community, and by the local community we mean the people who work and live in Newfoundland and Labrador, including the university people, but also the people who work in the resources and the fishery and the oil industry, because, of course, the decisions that will affect this place will not necessarily be deliberatively pursued. That is, we can't necessarily guarantee that there will be a due consultation with all interested parties about, for example, whether or not we frack around the borders of Gros Morne.
I want to ask you, what do you have in mind when you're talking about changes on that are being discussed and planned that are of significance to the West Coast right now? Are you talking about the fracking?
Well, that's an example. Mm-hmm. I think we could also talk about, you know, it's not a secret that our fishery has in some way returned, or not. Perhaps we should put more specifically, the biomass of the fish off the coast of Newfoundland, I think, is equal to what it was in 1989. And we all know that there's
fresh... On the west coast as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's a fresh cod in the supermarket most of the year. But we also know that the rural communities that used to live off of that fishery are not the ones who are processing that fish. Now, that means, of course, that those rural communities have no reason really to exist. And so we see them being shut... They see them shutting down.
And the numbers of fish are just not what they used to be either.
Well, this is a disturbing problem. I'm not really sure that the public is even particularly aware of what the fish, what kind of fish quality and what kind of fish quantity is there. It's not a discussion that's including us. It's one example. But the way we develop the fishery, for example, if we have, let's say, a centralized fishery that's more or less in the hands of multinational corporations, and perhaps it's being well maintained, we should hope that it is, we will not have a local fishery, which means that those rural communities have a reason to exist, and so we'll see them shut down as we see that happening now. That's the kind of decision that I don't hear being discussed enough.
Well, I don't even think the public knows about the, as you say, the quantity of cod that's available locally, because it's sometimes in the supermarket, but it apparently comes from very small areas and very strict situations. It's not like a general fishery that used to happen, that everybody could have and buy fish whenever they
wanted. Apparently the halibut stocks are quite...
I was speaking about cod in general.
But without going to the details that perhaps we don't have at our fingertips, the point is that we need to discuss that kind of issue publicly.
Yes.
Could I make one more example?
Yes.
So Sandy Pond was a pristine lake that was more or less executed through a decision that was made between the government of Newfoundland and Vale Inco. They needed a tailings container for their mining industry in Long Harbour. And so the cheapest and most efficient thing to do was to use one of the many ponds that are around there. And that was going to go ahead tickety-boo until a concerned group of citizens decided, well, wait a minute now, we don't want to see our pond destroyed, and why doesn't the multinational company pay for their own tailings container? They have options. And a fight was mounted. The Sandy Pond Alliance was formed. Unfortunately, they lost. They brought it to the Supreme Court, and a ruling was made that actually, in this instance, the minister had every right to give the pond. Now, whether or not we agree with that, that's not the point. The point is that the discussion about what should happen to a pond is a political discussion. It's not a scientific discussion in that old-fashioned sense of the word, that scientists alone will be the ones to decide whether this should happen or not.
And it's a public decision.
It's a public decision. Right. So people lost the place where they used to recreate. They lost a fishing space. They lost an environment. Something beautiful is taken from the human community as well as the natural community. And that needs, those kinds of discussions need to be much more, let's say, openly recognized as political discussions with and democratic discussions, which means that all interested parties have a say, at least a voice that should be heard when such a decision is being made.
And acted on.
Yeah.
Now let's go to the conference.
Sure.
To the event, the three-day event. Mm. What is your format there? And I understand your focus is going to be on the west coast of Newfoundland. What is your format and why? Let's say this. What are you hoping will have happened by the end of September 13th, 2015, so that it's not an exercise in people all talking around the issue, talking about the issues, all the various issues, and nothing concrete happens? So what are you? How are you structuring this event so that it's actually practical as well as informational?
Well, I think what we're hoping for, I think, is to be a game changer in the way environmental issues are discussed
in
Newfoundland and Labrador.
Well,
I think it's probably not controversial to say that Newfoundland and Labrador is hardly at the forefront of environmental thinking in the country. Canada itself is not even doing that well on the international scene. But in terms of Canada, I think the difference, let's say, between environmental awareness on the west coast of Canada and the east coast of Canada is dramatically different. So I think that we wish to introduce a degree of, let's say, environmental awareness at this moment, this tender moment in the history of human race, into our province. That's one thing we wish to do. Now, what shape that takes is really remains to be seen. Of course, there will be various concrete deliverables, as we say in the business. There will be publications. There will probably be an environmental hub set up with the Memorial University, some kind of discussion forum that will be continued into the future, a policy statement that would probably be prepared during the event that will be delivered to government, where we make recommendations, for example, vis-a-vis environmental regulations and the future of the area.
But I understand you're focusing on small steps, instead of trying to change the whole world.
Yeah.
You're focusing on small steps at a more local level.
Okay.
And
this is a difficult point because the environmental movement, which I think failed, environmentalism early 70s. It failed for a variety of reasons that we probably shouldn't go into here. And they had a slogan, that you should think globally and act locally. Remember this? And I think actually that we should reverse this. I think it's time. I think we have enough global thinking. I think we have too much global thinking. I think that your average 16-year-old knows more about what's happening in his smartphone and all over the world with his Facebook friends than he knows about what's happening in his backyard. I think we need to start thinking locally.
About throwing his garbage in the nearest pond.
That's right. We need to start thinking locally for the sake of acting globally. And thinking locally means freeing up a local voice. Now, there's something about this environmental problem which I've noticed, which I think is a psychological phenomenon. The thing is so enormous. Climate change is so enormous. It's so apocalyptic that we freeze like deer in the headlights. We freeze and we don't act. It has a depoliticizing effect on us, mm-hmm. The scale of the problem. Now, the problem is enormous, and it's fully understandable why it would have that effect. However, one needs to recognize how counterproductive this apathy is. So by shrinking, let's say, the focus to the local, we hope to, let's say, engender a certain kind of sober hope that people could actually do something other than recycle their garbage and make the difference that you're referring to. And I mean things like, we might not be able to solve climate change, but we could probably clean up the creek. We could probably get involved in decisions like Sandy Pond or the fracking of the borders of Grosmorne Pond. In other words, we could begin to be involved in the governance of our natural and built environments a little more actively.
Yes.
And I think that kind of consciousness will have global impact. That's thinking locally, acting globally.
Yes. How did you become involved in all of this?
How did I become involved? Mostly through teaching. I started teaching environmental ethics and environmental philosophy in 2000 at Allison University. And the course was very popular. It was a course in aesthetics. One wouldn't expect it to end in environmentalism, but it did. And at the end of the course, I began to notice that I was having this peculiar effect on the students, that they were looking at me dumbstruck and with horror in their faces as I described the degree of the problem. And I realized that this kind of apocalyptic horror, which they were so familiar with, was really not particularly useful. And at the same time, I had a son. My little baby boy looking me in the eyes, and I realized that I was playing fast and free with his future, with the way I spoke, the way I imagined. Of course, I wasn't creating nightmare scenarios out of nothing. The future is pretty bleak from a certain perspective. Nonetheless, I think that we are called upon now to put a little bit more into envisioning a future for, let's say, the next generation.
And bringing this down, more down to earth, to the event, you say that an aim is to stage an ecological intervention in the west coast of Newfoundland, and you've talked around that, and you've talked about that to some degree. Can you give me some concrete steps that you think might go towards achieving that aim?
Sure. I'd like to be more specific than I have been. So one of the things that's really unusual about what we're doing is that we're bringing together all of the academic disciplines with industry. That is, there will be representatives of industry there and government. That doesn't happen all that often, but it's a little bit more frequent. But even more unusual, with the visual and the performing arts. The reason for that is not to have to ornament the event with some paintings and some dance performances, but rather to recognize that art is one of the principal ways in which we give expression to our anxiety and hope for the future. And it's also something that's basically inclusive. Even if it's obscure, in principle, everybody has the right, let's say, to participate in an artistic activity.
And it also can contribute in ways of understanding and discussing, or maybe not verbally discussing, which just writing and talking doesn't do.
It goes into the nonverbal, which is something that's, of course, crucial when we're talking about something like nature. So this is one of the very concrete differences.
You're also having international people coming in.
We're having international people, but these international people will be mingling with local people, including, a contingent of high school students who have been hand-selected.
And that's on purpose, too, to have international people coming in.
Yeah.
And that must be, I gather, related to the idea of working locally and having global effects.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting the input from some of these people from other countries.
That's right.
To talk about how that could affect them or affect them.
Of course, and also to bring them here so that they could see this place, because I think this is a special place. There are other special places, of course, but many of them are very interested. So one of the things we're going to do that's also unusual, I think, is we're not going to spend our 3 days in a room talking.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually going to put our boots on and go walking.
Are you?
Yes, and that walking is not recreational.
Where are you going
to be walking? Well, we're going to do the Tablelands hike, and we'll go up Western Brook Pond. And not simply for recreational purposes.
If you don't know this area, that is part of
Grossmoor National Park. Which is a UNESCO heritage site and a threatened one, as we said, we referred to the fracking issue before. Mm-hmm. And an absolutely extraordinary place where one can feel the old earth.
Yes.
I think when you get in that boat at Western Brook Pond and you leave the dock and you head deep down the fjord, you can feel yourself sort of going back in time. And the earth gets older in a certain way. And you can almost feel what the earth might be like without people in it, what it was like without people in it, which is an amazing experience of sublimity.
Well, I hear this all the time from visitors, that nature is right in front of you, and that with all the rock around, you can see how the continent was even formed. The geology is right in front of your face.
That's right.
And I see geologists going around with their little magnifying glasses looking at the rocks, because it's all so obvious and it's right in front of you. And as you say, Grossmoor is a very clear example of all of that. And I think that is when I earlier said that Newfoundland is less spoiled than some other parts of Canada. That's what I mean, that there are places which are really ages old that you can see in front of you.
On the other hand, I mean, Newfoundland is hardly pristine. And so we're going to witness, this is a term that I'd like to take from a religious context, Pentecostals speak of witnessing to an event of grace. But we're going to witness to an event of nature. We want to, so this is not just recreation, as I said. We are going to bring this international community and this and local community, hopefully it will be one community by the end of the event, to these gorgeous sites in order to witness the state of nature as it is now at this point in history.
You're saying that it's not that Newfoundland, the island of Newfoundland, is not very pristine at this point?
I mean, what does pristine mean? If pristine means that it hasn't been touched, that's
certainly
isn't.
No, I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems to me it's more pristine than a lot of parts of Canada.
Of course, we still have a lot of wilderness, and we still have a lot of rural life, and that makes it interesting. But even with regard to Grossmoor Park, for example, and these are some of the issues that I think the philosophers will help us with. Grossmoor Park was actually pristinized by a resettlement program that was somewhat controversial. People were moved out of that park so that the park would be restored to its pristine state. So, and one wants to look at that kind of issue, if I might put a plug in for my own discipline, this is where philosophy can be particularly helpful. And so we're going to have a front row for the philosophers here who might shake us up in some of our complacent ways of thinking about things like nature, pristine, human, natural distinction, and so on.
Well, this is going to be a very, very interesting event. And in what ways do you see in the last couple of minutes we have here that it will be different from other events similar to it that take place around the world?
Well, I think one of the chief differences, as I refer to it, is this mixture of the international and the local, without distinction, I think, I hope. And also the bringing together of science, industry, and art. These are unique. Of course, there are other really exciting things happening all around the world. So I'm very interested in aligning our organization with these other initiatives. So we don't need to overstate how unique we are, but it's certainly unique, let's say, in this part of the world.
And
this has never happened before here.
And it's a pilot project.
This is a pilot initiative of an organization called For a New Earth, which is a group of primarily philosophers and ecologists, for the sake of mobilizing academic and corporate capital and putting it to use in staging these interventions in environmentally sensitive areas of the world, and with a view to freeing up a local expression of anxiety and hope for the future.
Well, that sounds very exciting and potentially a tool for change. I wish you well. I wish you success in getting the message out and in receiving the kinds of information that will be most helpful for the project and also for people in general and for the state of our so-called nature and our so-called climate, world, whatever you want to call it. I want to thank you very much for being here today, Sean. It's been really a pleasure having you here. And our guest has been Dr. Sean McGraw, Professor of Philosophy of Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. And he's convening the Future of Nature event. It's a three-day event taking place on Newfoundland, Canada's west coast, the Grenfell campus, and the Bon Bay Marine area, September 10th through 13th, 2015. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you very much, Roger Angel, and to you for being a very important part of our show today. I hope you'll join us again on radio, online, cable, next week for guest interview. I'm Barbara DeLand.